listening to Courtside Convo, your source for the latest news, analysis, and discussions on the NBA.
Another episode of Courtside Convo here on the campus of Michigan State University for Impact Sports. I am your host, Carter Landis. I'm here with Manit Patel. And for the first time in almost a year, we've got Josh Rayapan back in here. Josh, it's good to see you, man.
Good to be back.
All right, so season still hasn't started yet. We've got a couple weeks until games kick off, and then we can bring you content from actual games that have happened this season. So instead, we are going to do a little breakdown of our own rankings that we have kind of curated from ESPN's Top 100. We're going 100 to 75. Manit, I'll let you explain the rest of this.
Yeah, so we're taking ESPN's NBA rank list, going from, we're taking their 100 players that they took, and we're ranking it our way. Little bit of backstory for it. We're going to put rookies all the way at the end because they have not shown us enough. We haven't seen any NBA performance, so we don't think that we should put them ahead of NBA players who we have seen perform at the NBA level. I'm sure they will perform come season time, but as of right now, they'll be at the end. And we really just broke things down and thought, well, let's put this in a way where we just put our best guys in order, basically, and that's what it's going to be. We're going to do 100 through 76 today. Next week, we're going to go 75 through 50 and so on and so forth. And eventually, we'll, at mid-season, and then hopefully again at season end, or whenever we decide to, we'll come back to you guys and we'll bring these updated rankings, including this list of 100 players. So we'll have some players that'll fill in. If players fall out, we'll make note of that and all of that. But just going forward, this is going to be something that we'll have down the line too. So hope you guys enjoy.
I'm going to have a little fun with it. All right. So to start, based off of ESPN's rankings, at number 100, they had Norman Powell, who had a midseason trade. He went from Toronto to Portland and had himself a pretty good season, but we had Norman Powell a little higher than that. But our 100 that we decided, we went with Jalen Green because, as Manit said, no matter how good we think the rookies are going to end up being, we ranked them last because we have still not yet seen them in actual NBA minutes. And then the same thing goes for Cade Cunningham, who we had at 99. ESPN's 99 was Danilo Gallinari, who had himself a decent season off the bench for the Hawks, played some important roles in the playoffs, shot it pretty well, you know, did what he had to do. They brought him in there because they wanted some vets and some shooters, and they got exactly that out of him. So, and then ESPN, their 98, they had Steven Adams, and it looks like we ranked him there the same way. So what do we think about Steven Adams in his new home in Memphis, right?
Yes, Memphis. Okay. So he got traded there. He had his lowest scoring output since his third season in the NBA. Second season in the NBA, actually. But he still was like the rebounding force that he normally is. Block numbers dipped. He dipped defensively production-wise. But I think it'll be an interesting fit to see what he does in Memphis. Run a little bit of pick and roll with Ja. It'll be fun. I think he can help them space the floor if Jaren Jackson wants to step out and hit a three once in a while. Take the interior defender's attention away from Jackson so he can slip out and make that three. But I think Adams is accurately ranked at 98th.
I think if we're considering the season he had last year, that's a pretty fair ranking. Because,
yeah,
well, it may not have been his fault. He just didn't have a great season last year in New Orleans. They, you know, they ran some weird lineups with Stan Van Gundy, Zion and Brandon Ingram, all front court guys. They were all playing together, and it was just a log jam. So it was weird there. So 100, 98, 99, 98, 97. They had Will Barton of the Nuggets. Our 97, we had John Wall. Josh, what do you think? John Wall, he hasn't signed anywhere.
Man, it's just sad seeing the downfall of John Wall. Because, like, I remember I used to go watch the Adidas commercials with him back in the day. And, I mean, I don't want to say I have given up on him. But, I mean, it's just hard, especially on a roster like the Rockets, where you do, you know, you're going to have opportunities to score. Very young team. But, I mean, he's not the same player. He doesn't have that extra step that you'd use. You know, that would be his main advantage. He was always his speed and athleticism. And when that's gone, his game just really didn't translate to a, you know, non-athletic build now. And, I mean, to me, it just hurts to see, especially, you know, being a Bulls fan, seeing Derrick Rose and sort of like the same thing, just injuries just destroying your career.
Is he going down that path like the one, the Foot Locker commercial where he does the used cars and everything?
Open up the wing place.
Disappointing stuff. John Wall, I think they, you know, when he was part of that trade that sent him to Houston, I think what they were kind of anticipating with him, because they still had James Harden at the time, that those guys would play together and they would work with each other well. And maybe they thought that he could be a guy who could mentor the young guys, but it kind of didn't turn out that way. You know, and I think that they both knew that it wasn't going to work eventually, and they let John Wall go elsewhere. I believe he's still a free agent, but
he's still on the team.
He's still on the Rockets. They haven't bought him out.
No. It's a $90 million buyout. Oh. He's going to command more than Blake Griffin would if he was to get bought out, because his contract is worth more than Griffin's was. So he will ask for, I assume, every penny on that contract, and don't see otherwise happening.
That's just awful.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. I wasn't aware of that. All right. So ESPN then at their, I believe, 96, they had Jalen Green. Our 96, we went with Lauri Markkanen, who was recently traded from Chicago to Cleveland. And Josh, you were a little, give me a little laugh over there. So you're telling me that was probably a good thing, right?
I mean, it was just so many things with Lauri. I mean, to start off, I mean, his first season, you know, I thought he was going to be a great post scorer because, you know, he had that in his game. And then and part of it was the scheme, Jim Borland, to try to turn him into a spot-up shooter, and just the lack of defense. And offensively, you're 7 foot and you can't have a post game and you're not backing down centers. Just getting pushed around soft. I mean, we saw in the preseason game, Lonzo Ball is half his height, and he's beating him down in the post defensively. I mean, it's just the small things with it. He's still a great shooter, and I think he has potential, and I hope, you know, on the Cavs, I think maybe the offensive system will use him a little bit more. But defensively, I think he's one of the worst in the league, and it just the drop-off in production offensively and the efficiency was just terrible.
Manita, how do you think Markkanen fits in Cleveland, where they have all those big men?
Not well. I really didn't like what Cleveland did this offseason, just go out and get big men galore. It made zero sense. They have way too loaded. And it's not a good thing to have, like, that loaded of a front court, because you can't distribute the minutes evenly. Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Lauri, like, Kevin Love's still there. There's so many minutes to spread between too few guys, and it's not going to work out well. And I think Cleveland is going to finish lower than Detroit because of the dysfunction that they'll have, honestly. That's just me, though.
No, you're definitely right. It's definitely going to be hard for them to divvy up the minutes. I think I saw them play Atlanta in the preseason.
It just doesn't seem like a playoff roster.
Definitely not that.
Definitely not for a while.
Definitely not that. The thing is, I think I saw mostly Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley. There was a healthy mix of Markkanen in there. I didn't see a lot of Kevin Love. I saw him play a little bit. The thing about the Cavs is, if you have Mobley at the 4 and Allen at the 5, nobody is going to score at the rim on that team, because Allen is a great rim protector and Mobley can defend the perimeter at his size. So it's going to be tough for teams to score on those guys. It just depends on how much they can score on the other end. And then at 95, after Jalen Green, the ESPN put Kevin Huerter of the Hawks at 95. R95, we had, it appears to be Robert Covington. And Manit Covington has kind of moved around a lot in the last couple of years.
He has been. He's been a journeyman since 2018 when he got traded from Philly to Minnesota in the Jimmy Butler deal. From there, he got moved from Minnesota to Houston. And he was a part of that ridiculous three-point shooting team that they had. He was supposed to be used to stretch the floor and ended up shooting the worst three-point percentage he has ever shot with any team. With Houston, ironically, wasn't really the best, saw his production numbers dip there, ended up in Portland, and I thought he had a good year. Bounced back, best three-point shooting numbers of his career in Portland. Point production was a little bit down, but overall, I thought he was much improved from the year before.
I mean, yeah, it's the NBA, you know, you have to do one thing, just do your job as a role player, and I mean, I don't think there's a player that epitomizes that more than maybe Robert Covington. You know, he's not going to blow you away with anything. He's not going to, you know, score 20 points a game. But, you know, if you need him to hit a shot, you'll hit a shot. You need him to defend, you'll defend. And, you know, I think that's very undervalued, especially in today's NBA.
I definitely agree. He is one of those guys who epitomizes that 3-and-D role. I think if he completely buys into that role in Portland. I know Portland is just, I think, one of those teams. I think we agreed that wasn't going to be great. But if you get the Robert Covington of a couple years ago, it could change the landscape just a little bit.
Just a little.
You know, enough. Not much, but just enough. He's one of those guys who gets it done. He's one of those guys you want on your team, I think. ESPN will continue 94. They had Jonas Valanciunas. We were a little higher on Valanciunas, and at 94, we put Duncan Robinson. We put Duncan Robinson, Manit.
One of the best shooters in the league. One of the best shooters in the league. Three-point numbers saw a little bit of a dip, but he's still one of the most efficient shooters in the league. It's really up to him to improve defensively and make this contract that Miami gave him worth it. I think it's 85 over 5.
Yeah.
I think.
Something like that. It's definitely ballpark of those numbers.
So he's really got to improve defensively to make it worth it. But his offensive game is ridiculous. I mean, just it's hard to defend someone who can shoot that well, any way you slice it.
Josh, Miami isn't exactly Brooklyn offensively, but if Hero takes another step and you have Robinson there, we know Jimmy Butler's going to get his numbers and Lowry is facilitating. They're pretty dangerous in the East.
I had them third.
Yeah, they're especially with Bam, too. People don't talk about Bam as well. I mean, I really like Duncan Robinson, you know, what he does. Because you know what he does? He stretches the floor. He provides that space. He lets Jimmy be able to cut inside and facilitate. Especially with Kyle Lowry now. You had another facilitator with Bam now. So now you have the Kyle Bam pick and roll. And you still got to defend the perimeter. I mean, they still got shooters there as well. And you're talking about how much he's making per year. $17 million. What are you going to say, a top five shooter in the league? I think that's well worth it, especially how much people are making nowadays. I mean, Steven Adams is making, what, $30 million? So, for me...
That's unfortunate, is what that is.
I think it's
$30 million is unfortunate.
Goodness. You always need floor stretchers. You always want to have guys...
Steven Adams is not one,
and if he says, I'm shooting threes this year, that's reason for concern. But
it's always reason for concern.
But they do have so many options. There's a lot of things they can do on the floor, and Eric Spoelstra's running the show. So how would we be surprised? So would we be surprised to see Miami back in the finals next year?
No,
I don't think I would.
I wouldn't be surprised, but it's just because the Nets. Brooklyn.
Brooklyn and Milwaukee.
You know, if we could have just had a normal NBA season and let super teams like go away for less than a year, it would have been fantastic. But no, James Harden, little baby, and it was just really unfortunate that James Harden decided to go to Brooklyn of all places. Like go to Milwaukee or Miami and team up with Jimmy Butler. Like Bam isn't an established superstar yet. I'd say he's really, really close to that line, but he's not KD or Kyrie. Like,
well, here's the thing. Who knows?
Be a man, James Harden. Don't be a bum. Come on.
Woo.
Here's the
thanks
thing.
For ruining the league again.
Shooting hot from
here's the thing.
Woo.
How do we know what's going to even happen with Kyrie right now?
We don't.
Exactly.
It is absolutely up in the air. All right. 93.
Be a man, James Harden. That's it.
My goodness. That was awesome. That was awesome. 93. They went with Mitchell Robinson. We were a little higher on Mitchell Robinson. We put Will Barton at 93, as they said previously, where they had him ranked at, I believe, 97. Will Barton is just,
interesting.
He's an interesting guy. He's one of those quality
role
vets.
Players.
He's one of those quality vets and role players. And that's really what this whole list is just it's quality vets, role players, and a couple unproven guys. A lot of 3 and D on here. You'll probably hear that a lot from us. But Barton...
Courtside Convo loves their 3 and D
we
guys.
We love our 3 and D guys. And we love Nick Claxton.
Nick Claxton. Goddamn.
And, all right. Anyway, we'll move on. I didn't have a whole lot to say about Mitchell Robinson. 92, they had Duncan Robinson, but as you know, we were much higher on him. At 92, it appears... Did we have Valanciunas at 92?
I think we had Dylan Brooks.
We did have Dylan Brooks because it looks like we have two 82s on here. That's where we got mixed up. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. We had Dylan Brooks at 92. Josh, Dylan Brooks was pretty good down the stretch for Memphis.
I mean, I think he's a great scorer. I thought he was the second best scorer on the team next to John Morant. You know, his 3-point percentage was, you know, up and down, I guess. He's a streaky shooter. But, I mean, he sort of reminds me of, like, CJ McCollum next to Dame, you know. Who's that guy who can just be a second scorer, just, you know, go out, just get buckets. And for me, I think he can be that guy. Defensively, he's still not elite, but I mean, if you're talking about a number two scorer on a team that, you know, already has Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr.
JJJ, most improved.
That's your boy.
I know that's Malik's guy there, but I like his fit, but I think he's more of just a scorer right now. I'd like to see him maybe get more involved in this facilitation, work other more aspects into his game. But right now, I think 92 is a safe spot for him.
Manit, I think you were higher on Memphis, right? Or was that Liam?
I am pretty high on Memphis. I mean, we both were. Liam was pretty high on them, too. I had them making the playoffs. I think Liam had them in the play-in. I just think Memphis is a good team. I thought they were a decent team when they drafted Ja. They made a decent run. They look good at the end of the season of Ja's rookie year. They look really good last year, pushing the Warriors around. And, yeah, I think they could make a run. It'd be fun.
It was a 5-game series they played with Utah. Utah was just the better team, and they ended up winning. But yeah. I don't think Utah dominated them in any facet.
No.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Both games are close, yeah.
I think Memphis, another year with all those guys together, a healthy Jaren Jackson. If you get the Dylan Brooks that you had last year, I mean, that's going to be a team that's
exactly,
tough. And
yeah.
I'm a fan of Taylor Jenkins as a coach.
Brandon Clark.
I love Brandon Clark.
I love Brandon Clark.
He's one of those guys that's kind of fallen out of favor recently. And if he can kind of find his footing again, that's another guy who's pretty tough. And we talked about it last week, Zaire Williams. We're all pretty big fans of that pick. If he can be a guy that pans out.
We are big Zaire Williams
guys. Don't forget Tillman, too.
And Xavier Tillman. And your boy who we were talking about before the pod started, Desmond Bane. They just know
Sharp
how to draft.
Shooter, man.
They've had a really good draft.
Only
draft
bad
lately.
Thing is that they have that $30 million lump in there.
It's okay. They got a first for it, didn't they?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, you better
they got a first out of it. I'm 95% sure.
I mean, yeah, if you take on that contract, you better get a first.
My goodness. All right, at 91, they had Derrick Rose. But our 91, we had Tim Hardaway Jr. We had Derrick Rose quite a bit higher than...
Yeah, a bit higher.
He was my most improved player, I had him. But we have Tim Hardaway Jr. at 91. They had him higher. We kind of bumped him down a little bit, and I think that's basically just because of the inconsistency of Tim Hardaway Jr. He can give you a 26-point game on...
I would say when he's... Sorry for cutting you off, Carter. But I'd say when he's on, he's better than quite a few players on this list that we have ranked higher than him, but it's just the fact that he isn't on all the time.
He can give you a really poor shooting game, and there were moments in the playoffs where he had some pretty tough shooting games.
Yeah.
Not a tremendous defender either. Doesn't really facilitate. He's really just there to score. And if he's not doing that, what do you get from him?
Reminds me of J.R. Smith, low-key, a little bit.
He definitely is in that kind of, like, in that trope. Like,
he's either microwave or he's off, man.
One thing I do know is he will always go off against Atlanta, and that just drives me nuts. Every time. But, yeah. Tim Hardaway Jr., if we see some consistency from him, that makes Dallas a much better team.
Yes, agreed.
We talked about Dallas. Dallas is one of the teams I was lower on. I just didn't love their roster. I don't love Jason Kidd at all.
But Luka
is love just me, the Luka. Thing that holds it all together. All right. 90.
Courtside Convo knows my Luka love.
Yes, we do. All right, 90. They had Jordan Clarkson. And we thought that was a little bit disrespectful. So we had Clarkson higher, and we had Joe Harris at 90. Is it a little bit of recency bias just because Jordan Clarkson won Sixth Man of the Year and Joe Harris shot poorly in that playoff series against
yes.
the Bucks?
Yes,
yeah,
it
probably.
Is 100%
yeah,
recency bias.
Yeah, no, probably.
But it's okay because it's our rankings, and it's going into the year.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So it's where we think of these guys from their most recent performances.
Yep. Joe Harris, to me, though...
Although recency bias is kind of dumb.
It is, and I don't love it either, but Joe Harris is one of those guys who usually is a very consistent three-point shooter, just shot really poorly.
Poorly.
I know.
Just not well in that series.
Un-Joe Harris-like.
It was very un-Joe Harris-like, because usually that's just a guy that you really should not leave open
Never.
Under any circumstance.
Not a good thing.
Harris has been one of those guys. He kind of built himself into the player, kind of like Duncan Robinson did. He's one of those guys, I think he spent... I think he was a 4-year guy at Virginia. Spent some time with the Cavs. That didn't work out the same way that he thought it would. And then in Brooklyn, he's just been awesome. I think he was awesome even in that 2019 run when Kenny Atkinson was the coach and D'Angelo Russell was running the show. But Joe Harris, yeah,
I mean 47% from three on the
Sheesh.
Season.
He won a shooting contest, didn't he? Didn't he win a three-point contest?
I think he did win the three-point contest. I'm not sure.
1 year. He's a special shooter. He's definitely a good shooter. I mean, that's what you get from him. He's one of those marksmen. And Brooklyn will know how to use him. Brooklyn is going to have shooters everywhere. And then it's like you defend all these guys. But then look, Joe Harris, wide open for three, knocks it down. So
Brooklyn's going to have everyone.
Oh, my goodness, they are. All right, so we'll move to the next one. 89, they had Robert Covington. We had Norman Powell. We were higher on Norman Powell. I thought Norman Powell had himself a good season once he got to Portland. I think he fit in there better than maybe Gary Trent Jr. did. Manit?
I love Norman Powell. I thought he was a good pickup. I liked the Gary Trent move, too. I thought it was a good trade for both teams. I liked the fact that Portland brought him back. Little bit pricey contract. I think it's same thing, 285, or sorry, 5 for 85, like Robinson, maybe 90. But he became a good third scorer for Portland that they really needed, right behind McCollum and Dame, almost matching McCollum's production a little bit. On some nights when McCollum wouldn't perform as well, Powell would be there to pick up the slack. I think good move to bring him back, and I think he's pretty accurately ranked at 89. There are quite a few players on this list still better than him because he lacks a defensive game that some of them might have. But overall, his offensive game is nothing to be ashamed of.
I think we've mentioned this. It's just a bunch of guys like, oh, yeah, he's good.
He's good.
And Norman Powell is really just one of those guys like, oh, yeah,
oh,
he's
yeah.
good.
He's all right.
Whenever I would see Toronto play back when he was in Toronto and he wasn't getting minutes, but in his limited time, he was lighting it up on the court. And I'm like, why does he not play more? Why don't you use Norman Powell? I mean, it was just another one of those guys that Masai Ujiri found in the second round. Absolutely dominant scouting.
Like he's going to do with this roster.
And he's going to do. Yeah, like
he's gonna
I'm low on Toronto, but I feel like they should be better. You know, just because of the fact that they have good coaching, good management. Fred VanVleet's still there. And I know we got off a little bit just because Norman Powell's not there anymore. I was just mentioning, you know, that was just a little transition. But Norman Powell is good in Portland.
Toronto's a good team.
And Toronto's a good team.
They will be decent.
These two things are not mutually exclusive, but maybe they are. Anyway. The next one they had was at 88. They put Seth Curry, the pure shooter in Philadelphia. Our 88, we had Terry Rozier. And Terry Rozier, I had a conversation with one of my friends who thinks Terry Rozier isn't good. And he just called him an inefficient shot chucker. But I think Terry Rozier proved himself to be a little bit more than that this year. I think he took a big step forward. Josh, what do you think?
You know, I think he's always a player, you know, who I think after, you know, his Boston days, everyone was hyping him up. And I feel like, you know, when you talked earlier about, you know, maybe an island player, someone, you know, you haven't given up on. I think Terry could be in that conversation because, you know, his scoring has been very vital for Charlotte, and especially, you know, alongside LaMelo Ball. I think LaMelo really fits him because LaMelo can be that distributor, can be that guy.
Hornets 5 seed.
Yeah, can be that guy to, you know, be the passer, which, you know, LaMelo's best at. And Terry can be that two guard, you know, just focus on scoring and doing what he does best.
He had an uptick in scoring, an uptick in efficiency. His three-point percentages went a little bit down, but that was just because of more attempts. I mean, he just improved his game all around. He's just a quality guard. Charlotte is fun. They are so much fun. And Terry Rozier is a big part of it.
It's LaMelo, like the Padres.
Miles Bridges.
The Charlotte gives me Padres vibes.
You think so?
I think so.
Better hope they don't miss the playoffs, though.
Yeah, they better not flop like hopefully the Padres
hopefully after the All-Star break.
Yeah, Rozier looked really good last year. I will not disagree with that. If he improves that three-point percentage, even though, like, shooting 39% is nothing to scoff at.
Yeah. For a guy who came in the league and wasn't a very good shooter
who
at all.
Who shot 32 his first year.
He was basically a slasher. Star.
And expanding that range. If he can shoot 40%, Rozier's going to be a good player.
Absolutely.
Alongside Ball. It'll work well. I'm excited. I think the Hornets have so much upside. So,
yeah, he's continued to get better every single year. And at 87, ESPN had another Charlotte Hornets player, Miles Bridges. But we are a Michigan State podcast. We love Michigan State. We love Michigan State alums in the NBA. We had Miles Bridges higher than 87, and at 87 we had Mitchell Robinson. And I'm glad we can touch on Mitchell Robinson because I think while he was hurt a lot last year, he is
upside player.
Huge upside player. Josh and I were talking about it. We love energy centers. Mitchell Robinson has become, I think, even more than that. I think he's a super skilled post guy, elite rim protector, you know, just top-tier defender. I think him coming back for the Knicks this year will be a huge improvement over what they were playing with, like, Taj Gibson. It'll definitely help them.
I really would have questioned the Knicks front office had they not exercised his team option. I thought it was a necessity for them. And the fact that they did, good for them. Mitch Rob's a good player. And paying, $2 million for a player of this caliber defensively?
Is a steal.
Steal. Any way you put it. Regardless of how many minutes he's going to get, having someone like this on your bench to know you can turn to in any key situation to shut down the paint is huge.
Big time.
Yeah, you saw what happened with the Celtics in the playoffs. They have no post defense, and you saw them get exposed. You saw Bam just destroy that team. And, you know, you see it this new era of, you know, these centers who can stretch out, you know, these centers who can stretch the floor. And, you know, especially I think the most important thing for a center now defensively is, you know, can you guard the pick and roll? Can you switch off onto a shooter? And to still, you know, be able to defend. And you look at Mitchell Robinson, he could do that still. And, you know, he's still protecting the paint inside. Even though I get it, his block numbers has gone down. I mean, he's still there. He's still contesting shots.
You still know.
Yeah, you still
know. And you're still wary of the fact that he's there.
Like, Rudy Gobert's defense, 10% of it is the blocks, 90% of it is the presence.
It's all about presence if you're a big man in the NBA.
That's how it goes. I think Mitchell Robinson, year four coming up, he'll be 23 years old. I think he's just going to keep getting better. And, I mean, he'll be playing with Tibbs, who's a good defensive coach, and he'll just continue that, and they're just going to, once again, be one of the toughest teams to score on. Number 86, ESPN had Devontae Graham. We at 86 had Kevin Huerter of the Hawks. I was thinking, what is Kevin Huerter like not at least above average at? or at least average at, I'm sorry. Like, obviously, I don't think he's a great defender, but I think he's average enough that you get off. Obviously, you know what he is offensively. He can shoot it from anywhere. He has confidence. He'll pull up from anywhere. He can put it on the floor a little bit and get into the paint if he needs to. Obviously, you prefer him shooting, but he came up as one of the better players for the Hawks in the playoffs last year. And I would really like for them to extend him because I think he's going to be so important to this team this year. I know that they have shooters from anywhere on the court, but he's one of those guys. I think he's one of the more prominent shooters. He probably won't start the season. But off the bench, a lot of teams probably wish they had a Kevin Huerter off their bench. Am I being biased or is that true?
I don't disagree. I mean, it sort of reminds me of like Milwaukee with Dante DiVincenzo. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of that same role, just a guy off the bench, you know, can line and get you some buckets, just do everything right. And even though, you know, the Bucks still won, you know, without DiVincenzo getting injured right before the playoffs, mm-hmm. but you sort of saw, like, on the bench how that affected their rotations and everything. And I think Huerter potentially can be that guy to the Hawks.
Ooh. Big stuff right there. That's, yeah. That's spicy.
I like it.
I think the Hawks could be amongst that top tier teams if they do put it all together, like you said, Josh. I like Kevin Huerter. I agree with you, Carter. He's just about average at everything he does except shoot. But yeah. I really have nothing else to say on Kevin Huerter. He's
game
just
seven Kevin.
There.
He was tremendous. And then the next rankings, 85, they had John Wall, but we at 85, we had the guy who Kevin Huerter was giving constant buckets to in game seven, and that's Seth Curry. Seth Curry is a pretty good player. I think Seth Curry is obviously, you know what you get from the shooting. It's just a lot of shooters on this list. And you know what you get from the shooting. You know what he can do. He was one of the only contributors in that series last year. Josh, Seth Curry, man.
Seth Curry.
Sniper. All you need to say about him is just a sniper, man.
One of the best pure shooters in the league.
It must be hard because you know your brother is Steph Curry, you know, the greatest shooter of all time. And, you know, you got to live in that shadow. But the fact that, you know, I'm pretty sure he owns the record for, what, highest three-point percentage all time?
A single season, yeah.
Yeah, in a single season. I mean, I'm sure he has that on Steph. But, I mean, to carve out a role for yourself like that, especially in the league, you know, there's one thing that's always going to be wanted, and that's three-point shooting and defense all throughout the league. And, you know, defensively, we don't need to talk about that. But, you know, he's just a sniper. He knows his role well. I think underrated part of being, you know, a shooter is, you know, your agility and ability to get open, the ability to read screens. I remember watching Reggie Miller talk about it. How are you going to use screens? How are you going to use your angles right? How are you going to cut? And I think Seth Curry is among one of the best shooters to actually, like, you know, in terms of off-ball movement as well.
He's a smart player.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
He's very smart. He's very crafty. He's very crafty in how he gets open.
He can and he can create a little bit too.
You can tell he grew up in an NBA house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dell and Seth and or he is Seth. Dell and Steph and Seth. Yeah. There's a lot. I wonder what three-point contests look like in the backyard.
That must be fantastic.
That must be great. I would pay to see that.
I would pay to see it, too.
I would love to watch those guys play. All right, 84, they had Darius Garland. Our 84, we had Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham, now in, I believe, New Orleans because of that trade. I think it's a chance for him. Like, we saw him kind of emerge his rookie season as one of those, like, oh, he's one of those surprise guys. And then we saw him, not the most efficient shooter by any means, not a great defender, pretty decent facilitator, but still one of those guys who can score whenever you need it. Manit, what do you think he's going to look like in New Orleans now?
I think it'll be interesting. I really don't know how he's going to fit because New Orleans is just, it's kind of like Cleveland except off. Better off, I would say. It's an interesting situation of players right now who haven't really played together. They added a lot of new pieces in. New roster confirmation, new coach. I think Willie Green will do a good job there. I just think it's going to take time for all of these new players to mold together with who they already had. But I think by the time the All-Star break rolls around, if they can figure things out, it can be
a good team with Devontae Graham scoring 20-plus points a game.
I mean, New Orleans is really just Cleveland of the East, but they never got LeBron to bail them out. But
Zion.
Chris Paul.
Yeah.
We all know what happened then. But you know, when I look at New Orleans and look at their point guards, they have Alvarado, Harper. I know they have Kira Lewis.
And, yeah, Kyra Lewis is one of those guys.
I mean,
they spent a first rounder on him.
Sadoransky, yeah. Too.
Oh boy.
And, but I mean, I look at Devontae Graham, and I mean, I think he can carve his role out as a scorer. But I mean, you also have Zion, and you also have Brandon Ingram, who again, ball in his hands, he's going to be a scorer. And I just see, how does he fit in? And I just don't think he really does, or his game.
It's such a weird confirmation of players.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's mostly I think of New Orleans. It's mostly the GM, because it's just dysfunctional the way they build around Zion. I mean,
my question with Devontae Graham is, I don't think he's like a natural ball handler.
Yeah.
But you can put the ball in his hands and he's more of a shot creator. So it's like, put him at the 1-2. You put the ball in Kyra Lewis's hands at the 1, and then you can have Devontae Graham at the 2. That's a pretty bad defensive backcourt.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look at the point guards, you're not getting a good defensive backcourt in this roster.
Yeah, there's not.
No, there isn't a single defender.
And that's going to really hurt them in a very talented guard-heavy Western Conference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Drew Holiday's not here anymore.
Nope.
Yeah, no bailouts. Yeah.
Good luck, New Orleans. I think that's all we have to say. All
Get
right.
Zion out.
So at 83, they had DeJounte Murray of the Spurs. R83, we had Danilo Gallinari.
Gallo
was one of those guys that the Hawks signed like right away in free agency in 2020. It's because Travis Schlenk wanted to improve the roster. He wanted to add vets to it. He came into some money, realized that he could go spend it, and he said, I want a veteran shooter. Gallinari has been nothing but a quality player his whole career. Great shooter. Got a couple moves in his bag, too. You know what you get from him, and that's knocking down shots, and that's exactly what he did for Atlanta last year. And will continue to do so. What do you think, Manit?
I like Gallo as a player. He's just been kind of consistent over the past few years. Scoring numbers dip, but, I mean, he was coming off the bench. He wasn't starting like he was the past 5 years. Minutes less, too. But I think he was really what Atlanta needed him to be. And that's all that matters as a player. If you get paid to do a job and you can succeed to do it, then you made your money's worth as a player, and he's worth the $20 million they're paying him a year.
One of those guys who gives Trey some relief.
Yeah.
That he didn't have his first couple years.
Exactly.
So
very smart player too.
I mean, exactly. Same thing happened with Devin Booker. I mean, you saw what happens. They finally bring in another star. He gets some rest. He doesn't have to score as much. You saw him contribute in other ways. I think Gallinari can be like, Gallinari is obviously, you know, not quite on the level of Chris Paul, but, you know, he helps, you know, like Manit said, with Trae Young. And obviously people are going to say, like, oh, his scoring went down. I mean, he went from Oklahoma City to what? Playing with Trae Young, John Collins, and, you know, the rest of that team. And, I this is the league you're paid to do. You're paid, you know, to help the team succeed, and I definitely think he did that.
Just one of the main pieces of a very deep Atlanta team. So at 82, ESPN had Lauri Markkanen. We had Darius Garland. Garland is one of those guys I'll speak on a little bit later, but he's one of those guys who I think some people are starting to give up on a little bit, but I mean, I think he's the point guard of the future in Cleveland, and I think that he's incredibly talented, and people are really going to see it. It's year three. A lot of times year three is a make or break year for a lot of players, and Garland will I think he's going to cash in. I mean, he's so talented offensively. He's shifty. You know, he's tough to stop as a ball handler. Good shooter. I think he's good enough on the defensive end that you can get by. And I think that he's going to prove that he can be him and Evan Mobley together, running a little pick and roll, knocking down shots together. Eventually, Cleveland will get back, and I think it'll be because of those two. Josh, Darius Garland, what are you thinking?
You know, I really like the Cavs' backcourt. Obviously, defensively, still a work in progress. But you look at his numbers, 17-6. I mean,
in year
two. Yeah, only in year two. I think he's, you know, he goes under radar because, you know, Cleveland's obviously a lottery team. But, you know, I think he can be that contributor to it. Maybe not a playoff team this year, maybe next year, but in a couple of years down the road, once you get some other pieces, get some contracts off the books, I think he can be a centerpiece, or at least one of the centerpieces in a quality playoff team.
It's an interesting guard rotation they have there because they brought in Ricky Rubio, too. I think he's a guy who can help Garland and Sexton defensively.
I think it's more of a mentor role, honestly, than, you know.
Yeah, you know, you bring in a guy like that. You bring in a veteran point guard to help your young guys. I think that's a tremendous thing that Cleveland did. So at 81, they had Terry Rozier. Our 81, we had Jonas Valanciunas. Manin, I believe that Jonas Valanciunas is one of the more underrated centers in the league, and really players. What do you think?
I agree. He is pretty underrated. I loved that New Orleans went out and got him. I think he's an upgrade over Steven Adams, which is what they thought too. And he would be generally consensus agreed upon as an upgrade. 7.8 win shares last year. That was the highest he's had throughout his career, save for 1 year in Toronto, which he had 7.9. Defensively, good defender, can slow things down in the paint, can still step out and pop a three. He shoots 37%, so occasionally, once in a while, if you need him to, put up the best rebounding numbers of his career, best scoring numbers of his career, only getting better. I think it's a good fit for him in New Orleans. I think we could see a 20-10 season from Valanciunas.
Honestly, I mean, how many players can we say have averaged 15-10 over the last three seasons straight? I mean, not many centers can do that, and I think, you know, he very much flies under the radar. I know I've been saying that phrase a lot, but I actually do mean this about Valanciunas. I think he's a top 10 center in the league, honestly, when he's playing. He easily should be. And over Steven Adams, you know, like Manit said, that's absolutely an upgrade. And, you know, I think with Adams, you know, obviously the ability to stretch the floor, especially in the center, when you're playing with Zion Williamson, that is absolutely crucial to be able to, you know, give him the post space and maybe coexist.
Give Zion space to work, yeah.
Coexist. Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why the Steven Adams experiment failed.
There are some good parts of New Orleans, and Valanciunas is one of them. You know, I think I trust Willie Green to make it happen. It might take a little bit of time, but I definitely think that what you can run with Zion and Valanciunas on the floor together with Devontae Graham and Brandon Ingram there.
Very nice.
That's a squad right there that's not going to be easy to play there.
Just don't look on the bench.
Don't look out. Yeah, don't look outside that. All right. So at 80, ESPN put Caris LeVert. We had LeVert higher than 80. We have Miles Bridges at 80. And as we said, this is a Michigan State podcast.
Michigan State podcast.
Manit, you're the Hornets correspondent, it seems.
I don't know. I'm just high on the Hornets this year, and I love what Miles Bridges can do for that team this year. You have two of their players in the top. Or the bottom 25 of the 100. But Terry Rozier and Miles Bridges are going to be good pieces for this team this year. More speaking of Bridges, he grew so much as a player last year with LaMelo Ball right there with him. It was an instant fit. They glued really well together. I've never seen Bridges play with that kind of electricity. I haven't seen him play with that kind of electricity since he was here at Michigan State. It was something that was missing in, like, when I talked about it casually with friends, like, we discuss, oh, what happened to Miles Bridges? Like, he just lost. It looked like he lost a bit of his bounce, and that bounce was 100% back last year. He looked a lot more electric. You know, the numbers weren't really different from what he had his second season. His scoring actually went down. His rebounds went up 0.4, but he shot better, and he just felt like a more confident player regardless of whether or not the numbers improved. I think he could also be in line, like Jaren Jackson, for increased scoring and better minutes this season.
I mean, you're talking about a guy who can electrify a team, energize a team. All it takes is one dunk. One difference play to, you know, start a run, make a big play, you know, change the momentum of a game. And, you know, he may not be the scorer yet. He's still a little raw, maybe, perhaps. But, you know, his athleticism, especially with LaMelo, that combined there.
It works so well.
It is truly beautiful to watch.
It is.
last year I called the Hornets a league pass team. Like, I didn't think they'd win a lot, but they'd be really fun to watch. Yep. But they got into the play-in game.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously didn't go too well, but they worked their way there with LaMelo being out for a long time. So I see why you're super high on the Hornets.
James Borrego is a very underrated coach.
The team that they've built, James Borrego is coaching, the draft picks they brought in, this is a team to be on the watch for, definitely going forward.
I mean, I think a better fit would be Miles Bridges and Eric Collins.
Eric Collins is the best in the business.
I love Eric Collins.
That is so much fun. All right, so we're getting into 79 now. They had Tim Hardaway Jr. We spoke on Tim Hardaway Jr. a little bit. We put Derrick Rose at 79. And Derrick Rose is just one of those guys who you feel good that he is able, after the injuries that he suffered, to kind of re-sculpt his game and be able to fit in the league now as a shooter, as a guy who can still get to the basket pretty impressively. He was pretty much the main source of offense for the Knicks in the playoffs last year. It's good that in, what is this, year 14 for him? Year 13, 14 in the league. He's still going strong, and it's great to see. Josh, you know, you're a Bulls fan. You know where Derrick Rose, what he means to Chicago, we do.
Derrick Rose brings tears to our eyes.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, you know, obviously with the injuries, and one thing that you talked about was the shooting. That's one thing that, you know, Bulls fans were sort of missing out on before he got injured, because, you know, he still was, you know, could get to the rim. He was uber athletic, crafty guy. But the only thing, you know, that was his main nick early on was, can he shoot the ball more efficiently? Can he shoot from three more efficiently? And to see him add that to his game, especially now, and also you said molding your game, you look at it for him versus a guy like John Wall, and maybe John Wall just hasn't gotten to that stage yet within his progression of his career. But, you know, molding your game to, like, use your pick and rolls now, you know, craft around certain players, you know, it is a feel-good story with Derrick Rose. And, you know, it's just good to see, especially, you know, with Cleveland and how, you know, that experiment failed, and you had Minnesota. But, you know, it's just one of those players that you feel good about.
Yeah, I agree. I loved watching Derrick Rose play for Detroit. As a Pistons fan, it was wholesome. Great to watch him revive it a little bit. I mean, he might have done that in Minnesota with the 100-point game, but he really, like, stepped it up and continued that in Detroit, and that was really big for him. See him get traded and perform in New York. Good for him. Not really the biggest fan of the Knicks, but good for him. I think that getting a load off as a scorer but still sustaining that production is going to be really big for him this year. So if he can remain a 15 to 18-point scorer while carrying over those minutes but having less of a load and less of a reliance on that 18 points a game is going to be really nice for him, with Kemba and Fournier added.
It appeared that the Knicks needed to get him some help in that playoff series. Yeah. He was doing everything. So 78, they had Dylan Brooks over at ESPN, the fine folks. We had Jordan Clarkson, and Clarkson is one of those guys who just, you know, he won Sixth Man of the Year. I think for the first couple of years of his career, wasn't the most efficient scorer, wasn't really, I wouldn't call him much of a positive player on the court in his first couple of years, but last year when he got to Utah, I think a lot of that changed.
And a lot of it had to do with the fact that Quinn Snyder pushed him to take more threes than he did. His numbers might not have gone up, but he shot more, and he'd shot with more confidence. He was a better player when he shot more, and really added a new dynamic to this Utah offense off the bench. Allowed Donovan Mitchell to take a little bit of a load off. Another crafty scorer on the floor. He looked really good last year, Josh.
I mean, yeah, we can talk about, you know, some players are meant to be off the bench, or some players, you know, are born into a role as, you know, better suited off the bench. Some people are better suited to be starters. I think Jordan Clarkson, putting him on the bench, is possibly the greatest decision for his career, honestly. Because, you know, certain games, you know, especially when you're a pure scorer like he is, just getting buckets, and, you know, like me said, off the bench, all you ask him to do, play your game, play your style. You know, don't try to be something you're not, you know. Just go get buckets, and, you know, it's finally translating for me. You know, after what happened in L.A. and Cleveland, especially in the finals, it's great to see for a guy like Clarkson.
One other big thing he did last year that he hasn't done before is step up his defensive game. Yeah. In Utah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He played fantastic defense, had the highest win share. I think it added up to... He came within about a share and a half of his career defensive win shares in just 1 year in Utah.
The thing is you're not getting on the court if you don't play defense in Utah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Quinn Snyder let him know that the second he showed up, and he reformed to it. And good for him, because he looks like a good player. Signed to a 4-year, $50 million deal, and it looks worth every penny. It looks like even a steal for the Jazz at this point.
That's a fleece.
That's a fleece at this point for what Duncan Robinson just got paid and other players of Clarkson level. So I think good deal for the Jazz, and Jordan Clarkson is in line to win another sixth man if he has another year like
Absolutely. Yeah, he wasn't the go get buckets type of guy on the grand scale. He wasn't, you know, he's not going to do it the same way Steph or KD does it, but in a reserved role on the bench in Utah is just perfect, and you know, it's good on Quinn Snyder to find that role for him. Pretty tremendous stuff. So at 77, ESPN had Andrew Wiggins. We went with DeJounte Murray at 77. Josh, this is kind of your guy.
Very high in DeJounte Murray, especially, you know, when you look at who they're losing in production with DeMar DeRozan. And obviously, you know, people are going to be high in Keldon Johnson as well, another guy who's going to be a great player as well. But, you know, look at his stats last year. And, you know, 15.7, you know, 7 rebounds and 5 assists. And this is from your 6-foot. This is from your 6'4" point guard too, and don't even get me started on his defense. I think when we look back at this, he'll be top 50 by the end of the season. I just think he's that level of player, and he's been continually improving. And you know, I get the Spurs team haven't been the flashiest, so he's a guy that, you know, I don't see really lots of people talking about in the media, but I think he's definitely a player to look out. He was my pick for most improved this year, so I'm very high on the DeJounte Murray train.
That's good value.
That is great value.
Most improved player, DeJounte Murray. That's good value. That could definitely happen.
Agreed.
It's definitely his team, I guess, to an extent.
Yeah.
He's running the show there.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, defensively. Yeah, he's gonna be that guy. I mean, I think he's been nothing but a quality player since he stepped into the league. Just the energy, the discipline he has on the defensive end. Good scorer, not the best shooter, but I think that that'll come. I think he's a respectable enough shooter that you can see him
good
out there.
Good slasher.
Mm-hmm. That's one of his biggest slasher things. There's a lot of slashers on the Spurs. They have Lonnie Walker, too. They're not a terrible team. It's just I think that they're not the dominant force that the Spurs used to be. I think that they'll be tough to play, but...
I mean, it's just hard because they're in the West, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we are getting down to it. We are almost done. At 76, they put Cade Cunningham. As we said, we did not have him ranked. We don't know what he's going to be. We, at our 76, we instead had Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins, who saw a bit of a career revival with Golden State last year.
Defensively.
He became one of Locked the... Out. He played incredible defense. Wiggins Island was a real thing last year. He was tough to score on, and I mean, a guy who, if you work on the technique a little bit defensively, he's got that athleticism that he's gonna shut you down, and that's really what he did. I think he kind of capitalized on his athleticism on the offensive end too. He was one of those guys who didn't make the smartest decisions with the ball, but playing with Steph, playing with Draymond, guys with high basketball IQ, being coached by Steve Kerr, as we've got a little spectacle there. One of those guys who has improved himself greatly, I think.
I mean, you talk about guys who, you know, fight off rumors, especially in Minnesota, a guy who's been, you know, said he wouldn't put in enough effort, wasn't an effort guy, wasn't a guy who would, you know, be a day-in, day-out guy and wasn't really putting effort on defense. And, you know, we talk about guys with changes of scenery and what it does for them. I think this is a prime example with Andrew Wiggins alongside – you know, Steph Curry, and with Klay Thompson injured, he stepped in beautifully, especially, you know, in terms of, you know,
defensively,
when you lose Klay Thompson, and Klay Thompson's an elite defender, and you lose that along with his shooting, obviously, you know, no one's going to be the three-point shooter Klay Thompson is, but that scoring, and, you know, and still, you know, the lockdown defense was what, you know, mostly stands out to me.
Yeah, he really improved his defensive game last year. 2.7 win shares, highest of his career.
And like Josh said, was really the defender that they needed him to be with Klay Thompson out. I'm really excited to see what he does this year with Klay back, because having Klay back is not only going to stretch the floor more and give Wiggins more shooting opportunities, but he's also going to be able to showcase his defensive talents more, because now you have Klay, Wiggins, and Draymond. You have three defenders who you do not really want to attack any of them, and they're going to be a really talented defensive group there.
Combine that with
Wiseman at the rim, oh, too. Jeez.
With Draymond's IQ. Oh.
It's going to be a very talented Warriors team. I'm really high on them personally. I think they're going to do good.
I think they're going to be right back at it. Yeah, they're quality. So we've come to our final player on the ranks at 75. ESPN put Joe Harris, who we previously mentioned. And our final ranking is Caris LeVert. He's the only one left that we haven't spoke on. LeVert, I think that these rankings, if these rankings were based on who's going to have the best 2021-22, I don't know why Caris LeVert was not higher. I know it was only five spots. I know it was only five spots totally up, agree. But he's probably the, well, outside of Domantas Sabonis, I would put the ball in Caris LeVert's hands.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think, obviously, he needs to improve his deep shooting a little better, be a little bit more of a little bit of a better defender, facilitate a little more. But you know what you get with the scoring. So, I mean, LeVert is just one of those underrated guys, I think. He's part of the team, to me, with Indiana, the team that I'm really high on, is just full of guys who are quality players. I don't think they have a star. You know, I don't know if Caris LeVert's a star. I think he's just a very good player. I think that's where you draw the line with the Pacers. They don't have stars. They just have good players. And Caris LeVert's one of them. Microwave scorer. Can get hot at any moment. As long as he's healthy. Because he had that broken leg a couple years ago. He had the, was it a cancer scare last year?
Yeah. He did have cancer last year.
That's scary, man. But he's come back through it all and has just played really good
still
basketball.
Giving you buckets.
And he's just played really good basketball. He's one of those guys I'm a huge fan of. I think 75 is a pretty appropriate ranking, more so than 80.
I mean, when your nickname is Baby Durant.
There's according to who?
I mean, according to Basketball Reference.
Nicknames are so strange. I've never heard.
Basketball Reference has the most obscure nicknames out there for these players. It's kind of interesting. Baby Durant, I don't know.
No.
But Caris LeVert in 35 games last year had his best year.
Exactly, yeah.
Any way you slice it, like, if you were able to stretch that over a year's worth, that would have been by far and wide a good season for any NBA player. 20 points, shooting 45 from the field, 32 from the three-point line, which is a dip for him. Yeah. But I expect that to regain a little bit of form this year with more volume. I think Indiana is going to look to LeVert a lot for shots in the clutch, and I think he can definitely provide for them.
Especially alongside Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, good backcourt there.
That team's just going to be so deep.
They're going to be so solid.
Exactly.
So solid.
I mean, Pacers.
There's not great.
So Pacers.
Brogdon, LeVert. Is Jeremy Lamb still there? I think Jeremy Lamb's still there. As long as he's healthy, he's a quality
back.
Player.
TJ Warren's back. Sabonis. Miles Turner.
They added Chris Duarte.
Yeah.
So Pacers.
That is just the most Pacers.
Turner should have been defensive player of the year last year if he didn't get injured.
You got to love it. Yeah. That is our 100 through 75. Next week, we're going to come back with, you said,
74 through 50.
74 through 50. And before we get out of here, there was this interesting idea from another podcast I listened to. Not copyright or anything. It's just an idea. Disclaimer there. It's an idea that it's kind of like an island idea.
We liked
It's a player who you believe in, but everybody else is kind of off of this player. You're the only one left on the island. And Josh, I'll let you go first with yours.
Okay, now I'm going to go to Luke Walton in Sacramento. Maybe not. Maybe he's giving up on. I think he knows where I'm going with it. I'm going to go Buddy Hield.
All right.
Definitely not where I was thinking.
Who are you thinking?
Bagley.
Marvin Bagley's a good one, too.
I was thinking Bagley, if anything, who I do like.
I do like Bagley.
He'll be my pick down the line, not this week.
No.
I mean, I just feel like Buddy Hield's been getting disrespect, especially with all the guard overflow in Sacramento. And he's not giving you bad numbers. I mean, he's giving you an average, what, 2019-16 the last couple seasons. He's still obviously knows that three-point threat. I think offensively, he can be the second scorer on a great team or a good team.
So I had a pick earlier, but I'm going to change it. This player was traded this offseason as part of quite possibly the offseason's biggest trade.
Oh.
From LA to Washington, Kyle Kuzma.
All right.
We talked about him a little bit last week. I said we both agreed that we were a little bit higher on Kuz. We thought it was a good environment for him.
Right.
But I think Kuz is in due for a career season here with Washington. They need a second scorer behind Beal. They don't really have an established second scorer. I think Kuz could be that. Away from the media presence in LA, he had a good first year. And from there, it was just he was surrounded by LeBron James. He kind of lost the focal point and was expected to carry that same production over, regardless of who was getting minutes over him. I thought it was an unfair challenge to ask of someone so young, and I think he's in due for a rebound this year.
I will agree with you on that point. One thing I will say, though, Spencer Dinwiddie is still there.
Spencer Dinwiddie is probably still there.
He's probably their second scorer.
That is, yes, my bad.
All right. Okay.
Kuzma should be good this year.
You guys had some pretty good ones. Mine, I'm going to stick with mine. He's a guy I think doesn't get enough media attention, and that's just because of the team he plays on. And so most people are probably not paying attention to him, but that's Darius Garland. I think people have kind of, just because of the fact that the Cavs are bad, have not paid attention to Darius Garland. But I think that this guy is going to be, I know that the Cavs are still not going to be good, but I think he's going to be in the All-Star conversation. I know there's a lot of guards, but 17-6 in your second year, now you add Mobley, those assist numbers are going to go up, and adding a player like that is just going to make him a consistently better player. And I don't see any reason why if the Cavs decide they're like, okay, we're going to go with Darius Garland instead of Colin Sexton. Not so much, I'm sorry, instead of Colin Sexton, but they're definitely going to lean on Garland a little more. And personally, I think they should. I'm more of a fan of the fact I think Garland is a better player. So that's my guy. I think he's going to wake a lot of people up. They're going to come back to the island. They're going to be like, oh, okay. You know, we don't have to pay attention to this guy because of whatever reason. But Darius Garland is going to be a star. He will be in the All-Star conversation. I don't know if he's going to be an All-Star. People will be like, oh, he deserves a nod. And I'll say that. All right, so we had fun with this one, I think.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
That was cool. All right, so for Josh Rayapan, Manit Patel, I'm Carter Landis. Thanks, you guys, for listening to this episode of Courtside Convo, and have a great day.
Listening to Courtside Convo, a production of Impact 89 FM. Our thanks to Impact's General Manager Jeremy Whiting, Station Manager Amber Kinutsky, and Programming Director McKenna Lowndes. Tune in next time for more updates on NBA basketball